familiar with and comfortable with in Srimad Bhagavatam class. So two things that we want to do is starting next week with the new schedule, we're putting more verses together. So we may go through 5-10 verses a day until we can reach a more substantive, you know, philosophical point to discuss. So it will serve that purpose, I think, of giving the speakers more material that we can work with on our level of realization. And secondly, there's also the consideration that it would probably be 3 or 4 years before we would finish the 10th, 11th, 12th canto at this rate and return to Srila Prabhupada's purports back to the first canto. So we're actually going to move a little faster through this portion of the Bhagavatam, read through more verses like that, and we'll see how that works for the devotees. Hopefully it'll be okay and acceptable to everybody. So, returning to this verse, we are seeing the gopis are continuing to search for Krishna. Vishnu Chakri Thakur mentions that in verses 5 through 15, they ask 9 questions. They're questioning the creepers, they're questioning the trees, the flowers, the tulsi plant, they're questioning the Mother Earth, the deer, etc. Where is Krishna? Trying to find Krishna, see whether anyone knows of Krishna, and making various points along the way about the attributes of these different residents of Vrindavan. So this is, of course, a certain transcendental madness that we're seeing exhibited by the gopis. It's actually called, technically, it's a bhava called unmada. So there's 3 stages of this unmada. First, we saw in the beginning of this chapter that the gopis were actually identifying with Krishna, almost like they were not separate from him, that they were Krishna. Now they're searching for him everywhere in this kind of mad frenzy. Where is Krishna? Please, somebody tell me where he is. And then a little bit later in the chapter, they begin imitating the pastimes of Krishna. So these are all these different stages of this unmada, transcendental madness. And that's about the extent of my understanding and realization of that. So, go on. One thing that I thought was interesting in this purport and in this verse is the mention of the deer. And it said that the deer is very, very eager to see Krishna. And in fact, he's never lost to you. So this is the nature of the transcendental, self-realized residents of Vrindavan, both the deer and, of course, the gopis. They're seeing Krishna everywhere. And it's described here that he has never lost you. In other words, Krishna is always within the vision of these pure devotees of the Lord. So I think this is an important point to think about. What does it mean to be a pure devotee or self-realized and have this transcendental vision of the Lord at every moment? And of course, when one does become perfect in the process of devotional service, this is one of the important attributes, that one learns to see Krishna everywhere, and one never feels separation from Krishna. Of course, the gopis feel separation in one sense from Krishna, but that again is just another side of their extreme attachment. The separation attachment are there to invoke the loving feelings between Krishna's devotees. But in a sense, we can say they are never separate from Krishna because the remembrance of Krishna is there at every moment. And in fact, when Krishna does separate from him, and in a case like this, all they can think about is, where is Krishna? How do we find him? How can I again see Krishna? So, in one sense, this is our process of Krishna consciousness. We learn to again see Krishna. We learn to see God, to understand God, how he is acting in our lives, how he is actually everywhere. But if God is everywhere, why can't I see him? Even as neophyte devotees, we don't necessarily see Krishna all the time. Of course, Srila Prabhupada said, we can't see Krishna yet because we don't have the eyes to see him. It is not through material vision that one is able to understand the Lord. Of course, Krishna is very merciful in his wonderful, beautiful deity form as Radhashyama Sundari allows us to see him. But for the most part, we can't so much see Krishna with these eyes until they become very purified. So Prabhupada mentions that the way that we begin to see Krishna is through hearing. He says we don't see originally through the eyes, but through the ears, through the process of shabda, of sound vibration. That's how we begin the process of seeing Krishna. We also see Krishna through seeing Krishna's energies. Even a beginning devotee, even a new bhakta, can begin to see Krishna in this way because we see Krishna's energies and we know that Krishna is non-different from his energies. Of course, Krishna has his spiritual energy, he has his marginal energy, the jiva, and he has his prakriti, the material, external energy. But these are all Krishna's energies, and the devotee learns that all of these are part and parcel of Krishna. All energy is coming from Krishna, and so we begin to see Krishna in this way. Prabhupada gives the example of the light in the powerhouse. If a child saw a light burning in a lamp, he might think that that's the source of the light. The light's coming out of the light bulb from the lamp. But the adult or somebody who's a little bit older and understands sees that there's a cord that goes from the lamp that goes to the socket in the wall, and that there's electricity throughout the house. The electricity is going over to the pole, and that goes through many, many lines, eventually back to the powerhouse. So an intelligent person can understand that the source of energy that I see in front of me actually has its source of the powerhouse. So in the same way, we understand that all of the energies that we see, all the manifestations of variety throughout this material world, have a source. They come from that original source of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is a way that we begin to see and begin to understand that there's always this energetic source behind everything, and the devotee learns to have that discernment, that discrimination, that vision of Krishna. A nice little book called On the Way to Krishna. I used to always like that book. We used to distribute that a lot, and it's one I think is still around quite a bit. And in the third chapter of that is a chapter called Seeing Krishna Everywhere and Always. And I always thought this was really nice. I wanted to read just a little bit, a few paragraphs of Srila Prabhupada's writing that. I believe this is from lectures that Srila Prabhupada gave on the Bhagavad Gita. So in this part, Srila Prabhupada is talking about the verse from the 7th chapter, verse 8 of the Bhagavad Gita. O son of Kunti, Arjuna, I am the taste of water, the light of the sun and the moon, the syllable Om in the Vedic mantras. I am the sound in ether and ability in man. Prabhupada says, in this verse, Sri Krishna is describing how we can become Krishna conscious fully in all stages of life. All living entities must drink water. The taste of water is so nice that when we are thirsty, nothing but water seems to do. No manufacturer can create the pure taste of water, although they try and charge quite a bit for it. We can thus remember Krishna or God when we drink water. No one can avoid drinking water every day of his life. So God consciousness is there. How can we forget? In other words, every time you drink a glass of water, you can understand that Krishna is that pure taste of water. Similarly, when there is some illumination, that is also Krishna. The original effulgence in the spiritual sky, the Brahma Jyoti, emanates from the body of Krishna. This material sky is covered. The very nature of the material universe is darkness, which we experience at night. It has been artificially illuminated by the sun, by the reflected light of the moon, and by electricity. Where is this illumination coming from? The sun has been illumined by the Brahma Jyoti, or the bright effulgence of the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, there is no need for sun, moon, or electricity, because there everything is illuminated by the Brahma Jyoti. On this earth, however, we can remember Krishna whenever we see some illumination from the sun. Whatever sound we hear in this material world is but a reflection of that original spiritual sound. In this way, when we hear sound, when we drink water, when we see illumination, we can remember God. If we do this, then how will we not remember God? This is the process of Krishna consciousness. In this way, we remember Krishna 24 hours a day, and this way Krishna is with us. Of course, Krishna is always with us, but as soon as we remember this, his presence is factual and is felt. And then Prabhupada talks a little bit about how we come to that position. There are 9 different processes for associating with God. And the first method of association is shravanam, hearing. Inasmuch as we associate with God and we go on hearing the words of Krishna and his names, the contamination of material nature is reduced. In understanding that Krishna is sound, illumination, water, and so many other things, it becomes impossible to avoid Krishna. If we can remember Krishna in this way, our association with him is permanent. So here, Srila Prabhupada is giving the principle. He is giving the principle of hearing about through shravanam, through hearing shabda, spiritual sound vibration, we become purified. And we are able to understand more and more through the process of transcendental knowledge how Krishna is actually everywhere and how Krishna is in our lives. And then, of course, Prabhupada gives practical example This is the perfect teaching of the Acharya, that he gives the principles of Shastra, and he also shows how those principles are applied to each of us, how we can take up devotional service, how we can begin to understand practically the process of Krishna consciousness. So the practical process is simply to everything that we see, everything that we experience through all of our senses, everything that is in material nature, we see how does this connect with Krishna? How is this coming from Krishna? And I think this is something that we all experience. Devotee many times, all of us, I think, we like to be in nature or be outside or be somewhere. I mean, first of all, of course, it's a higher mode of nature. Prabhupada said the country is the mode of goodness and the cities are a mode of passion. So we naturally become a little more receptive, you know, to understanding spiritual knowledge in a more atmosphere, the mode of goodness. But it's also easier to see Krishna. It's also easier to see Krishna's energies working sometimes if we are out in the nature and are in some area like that. Because you can see the elements that Prabhupada is talking about here. You can see the air, you can see the sun, you can see everything around you. And the devotee naturally has that realization that this is all coming from Krishna. And if we see that there's some beauty there or something something that is attractive, we understand that Krishna is the source of that. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that all these beautiful, powerful, mighty things, everything is coming from him. It's just simply a fragment of his potencies, of his power. So we can understand a little bit of Krishna's energy, a little bit of Krishna's power, potencies, and beauty just from the reflections in the material world. What to speak of imagining, understanding the full source of Krishna's power and beauty and relationships and sweetness that is there in the spiritual world and in Vrindavan. So in a sense, we get a little glimpse of Krishna in this material world, a little reflection of Krishna that we can extrapolate, you know, what it must be like in the spiritual world. So Prabhupada said, we can't understand Krishna by these contaminated senses, but through the purifying process of bhakti. And Krishna is revealed by degrees to the extent of our devotion. To the degree that we have advanced in Krishna consciousness, to the degree that we are progressing in bhakti, to that degree, Krishna reveals himself little by little. Of course, that full realization is not there until the bhava stage, as manifested by gopis, residents of Vrindavan, and pure devotees. But still, we do begin to see, and that realization of the philosophy comes through the purification of the heart. Bhagavad Gita 11:54, Krishna says, "My dear Arjuna, only by undivided devotional service can I be understood as I am, standing before you, and can thus be seen directly. Only in this way can you enter into the mysteries of my understanding." In the purport, Prabhupada says, "One who has unflinching devotion for the Supreme Lord and is directed by the spiritual master, in whom he has similar unflinching faith, can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead by revelation. One cannot understand Krishna by mental speculation. For one who does not take personal training under the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master, it is impossible to even begin to understand Krishna." So we see in this world, those who are not devotees tend to be quite prone to mental speculation. And even as we talk to and interact with people from other groups or people even who are interested in yoga or meditation or things like this, one of the first things that you note is the speculative nature of their knowledge. So many ideas are there. Maybe this, maybe that, could be like this, I read this, I heard this. You know, so it's all over the place. So many different ideas of what might be the absolute truth. And everybody thinks, whatever my particular version, what I happen to be thinking at this very moment, as opposed to what I understood last year or what I might think next year, is equally absolute. It is completely true because it's true for me. Well, that's a very, of course, egocentric way of looking at things, because actually what is true is what is true. There is an absolute truth, and that absolute truth is coming from Krishna. And Krishna is revealing that absolute truth through the Shastra and through the sadhus and through the guru. And so by one who has a little bit of humility, one who has a little bit of sense of surrender, a little bit of intelligence, is able to understand that one must take shelter of the spiritual master. One must learn the absolute truth by one who has seen the absolute truth, by one who knows the absolute truth, understands it, and exemplifies it and shows it in their life. So that is the meaning of acharya. So Srila Prabhupada came and taught us not simply by his teachings, which of course he did, which illuminated transcendental knowledge, but also by his example, but also by his life. And so by seeing the life and the mood and the devotion of the guru, and by hearing the transcendental words of the guru, one can begin this process of Krishna consciousness. Because there's really no other way that one can do this. And Krishna also says to Arjuna, another thing that he says about the process of understanding spiritual knowledge, he says, I'm giving this knowledge to you because you are not envious of me. So, of course, we're all envious in this material world. That's practically, being here means we're envious of Krishna. It's almost synonymous. So one has to give that up a little bit. And we think, well, I'm not envious of God. But in one sense, of course, we are, because we still want to enjoy for ourselves, not giving everything back to Krishna. We sort of have our time for Krishna, our time for ourselves, and like this. So this is natural. It's natural being here in the material world, being here for many, many lifetimes, for we don't know how many millions of years. So, you know, that contamination will take some time to give up fully. But the point is that we have made the decision. A devotee has made the decision that I want to stop that process. I want to give up my envy. I want to give up my separateness from Krishna. And I want to learn from the spiritual master. I want to learn from Srila Prabhupada how I can take up real spiritual life, and how I can take up this process of engaging in my loving devotional service to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, under the guidance of the spiritual master, the process of purification begins. The process of the cleansing of the mind and the heart begins. And one is able to give up all of these inauspicious things, you know, and it starts from that process of hearing. So, as Prabhupada said, don't try to see Krishna, but try to first, through hearing, understand. He also said, don't try to see Krishna, try to have Krishna see you through your devotion. So that's the other aspect of it. In other words, when Krishna sees us, because we are trying to give a little bit of devotional service, because we are surrendering a little bit, we are trying to follow the order of the spiritual master, we are trying to take up the process, the bhajana kriya, of hearing and chanting, then Krishna bestows his mercy upon us. So that's why Krishna says to Arjuna, it's only by undivided devotional service that you can see me standing before me. And of course it's mentioned that when Krishna was on this planet, many, many people saw Krishna. Millions of people saw Krishna. And Prabhupada said maybe 50 people understood who Krishna was, really understood Krishna. So even when Krishna was personally present on this planet, that's no guarantee that everyone would say, oh, this now God is a sinner, here's Krishna. And everyone immediately worship Krishna. No. In fact, the demons tried to kill Krishna. Kamsa tried to, Shishupal, they tried to kill Krishna. And others just thought, oh, Krishna, he's this great king, or he's a coward boy, or whatever particular role he was playing. And only the devotees, only the unalloyed devotees, those pure servants of Krishna, they understood who Krishna was. First, as was being discussed yesterday, the gopis sometimes understood Krishna, most of the time didn't understand who Krishna really was. But they had higher realization than just understanding Krishna as his role as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They had the deepest devotion, the deepest love. And so through this process of hearing from the spiritual master, of hearing the Bhagavatam, understanding more and more who Krishna is, becoming attracted to him, and the purifying process of bhakti yoga, little by little, we will have more and more realization of God, more and more realization of Krishna, and begin to realize our relationship with him. So a very nice description of this, of this sort of perfectional stage of what we're aiming for in the Brahma Samhita. I'll see if I can get the tune right this time. Primanjana Trita Bhakti Valochanena Shantaksadaiva Hidyeshu Valokayanti Yangshama Sundarama Chinchaguna Sarupam Govindamari Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who is Shama Sundar, Krishna himself, with inconceivable, innumerable attributes, whom the pure devotees see in their heart of hearts with the eye of devotion tinged with the salve of love. I said that was a beautiful verse. This is from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj's purport. The Shyamasundara form of Krishna is his inconceivable, simultaneous, personal, and impersonal, self-contradictory form. True devotees see that form in their purified hearts under the influence of devotional trance. It will be clear that the form of Sri Krishna is the full personality of Godhead and can only be visible in the heart of a true devotee, which is the only true seat in the state of trance under the influence of devotion. When Krishna manifested himself in Vraja, both the devotees and non-devotees saw him with his very eye, but only the devotees cherished him, eternally present in Vraja, as the priceless jewel of their heart. Nowadays, only the devotees see him in Vraja in their hearts, saturated with devotion, although they do not see him with their eyes. The eye of devotion is nothing but the eye of the pure, unalloyed, spiritual self of the jiva. In other words, this is who we really are, seeing Krishna fully in our spiritual form. The form of Krishna is visible to that eye in proportion to its purification by the practice of devotion. When the devotion of the neophyte reaches the stage of bhava bhakti, the pure eye of that devotee is tinged with the salve of love by the grace of Krishna, which enables him to see Krishna face to face. The phrase, in their hearts, means Krishna is visible in proportion as their hearts are purified by the practice of devotion. The sum and substance of the shloka is the form of Krishna, who is Shyamasundara, Natavara, the best dancer, Muralidhar, holder of the flute, and Tribhanga, triple bending, is not a mental concoction, but is transcendental and is visible with the eye of the soul of the devotee. So I'll end at that point. Are there any other comments or questions? Yes, Jayshree?
You can hear in so many places that if you take one step towards Krishna, he takes 10 towards you. Mm-hmm. And it just seems like it's maybe in the beginning, we, especially the way Prabhupada talked, Srila Prabhupada was so positive. And he was so encouraging, and that everyone, all of his disciples were pure devotees. And I mean, but it still seems like we're still so far away, or that, mm-hmm. you know, we thought that we were going to have pure devotion and, you know, be perfect immediately.
Yeah.
But
well, I was realistic. I thought it might take 2, 3, 5 years to become perfect. When I joined. Others thought it would be immediate. Yes, we had very high aspirations. And we also were convinced we were going to make the entire world Krishna conscious within those few short years, too. Because we didn't have so much this vision of transcendental time, you know, the bigger picture of how things are manifesting. We tend to see in a very short time frame. But what we have to remember is that what Prabhupada told us was absolutely true. He said, all my devotees are pure devotees. Well, how is that? We all know we weren't pure devotees. He said, because we are engaged in pure devotional service under the guidance of the pure devotee. So in that sense, we're doing pure devotional service. I mean, in other words, what Prabhupada taught us in our practice of that service, there's nothing material about it. It's not mundane, right? There's no material connection. I mean, you know, if you're worshiping Krishna on the altar, you're chanting Hare Krishna, whatever you're doing whatever service you're doing or trying to preach, that's a pure and perfect service. Now, we may not be pure and perfect as we execute it, but the service itself is on that absolute platform. And therefore, by association with that which is pure, we become purified. Now, our only problem is we have this little time lag that's separating us from fully manifesting and realizing the nature of our pure devotional service that we're doing. And that's because, of course, the contamination of the heart that's been there for so many lifetimes. So it may take some time. You know, there's that one memory tape with Nara Narayan Prabhu, which I always really liked. Of course, he tells it very dramatically in his own inimitable style. And Nara Narayan, if you know him, was saying, he was, I guess Prabhupada was chanting, and he was walking back and forth, and he was in his room, and Prabhupada's chanting back and forth, and finally he kind of gets up the nerve, and he says, "Srila Prabhupada." "Yes." He says, "Is it possible? Is it possible that somehow through this chanting Hare Krishna that I too will become a pure devotee?" And Prabhupada says, "I chanted a while." And he says, "Yes, why not?" Chanted a little bit longer. Came back, took a couple minutes, back and forth. And then he looks and finally says, "But it may take a very long time." Anyway, Narayan tells that on himself, so that was. And that's true for all of us, obviously. You know, in other words, he is speaking for all of our condition. Yes, we will become pure. Yes, the process is perfect. It may take a short time, it may take a long time. It may take another lifetime, we may finish in this lifetime. But Prabhupada did assure us, if we simply, you know, I used to think, well, that sounds real simple. We simply chant 16 rounds, follow our regular principles, you know, to engage in devotional service the entire lifetime, we'll go back to Godhead. That sounded real easy. Now we see, seeing our history of devotees for many, many years, it's not so easy. It is rather special. Those devotees who can actually follow strictly the principles of devotional service through an entire lifetime, they're glorious. That's a very, very wonderful achievement, particularly those from the Western world who had so many things going against us, so many bad habits. So yes, it'll happen, but it may take some time. And we also have to remember our instruction, you know, from the Nectar of Instruction, that we engage in devotional service with enthusiasm, determination, and patience. So we have to kind of combine all of those things. We need to be determined. We need to be confident in this process, confident that our spiritual master can take us back to Godhead. And we have to be a little patient with ourselves, that we may take a little time to fully manifest pure devotional service. Okay. Any other thoughts on that or comments? Yes? Mataji? Absolutely. Thank you very much. Very, very nice. It's true. And as I said, those devotees are glorious who simply continue the process, you know, and around 30, 40, 50 years later. Yeah. True. It's Dharmaraj. I'll repeat the question since we lost the microphone there. He just says, we criticize the scientists by saying, yes, they think they can create life. We say, yes, in the future. And Prabhupada said it's a post-dated blank check, right? In the future, we'll create life. He said, they could argue that we're saying, yes, in the future, we'll become pure devotee. Yeah, that's an interesting point. I think there's one real difference, though, because it's the same thing. We can sometimes criticize the other religions, or Christians might say, yes, in the future, I'll go to heaven. I can kind of, you know, whatever happens this lifetime, in the future, I'll go to heaven. We don't actually say that. This is something that will only happen in the future. We actually, I think we claim, and we rightfully claim, that Krishna consciousness is something that is experienced now. It can be experienced immediately, and I think we all experience it. If we didn't experience some of the, you know, what should we call it, bliss or enjoyment or something of chanting Hare Krishna, if we were not having some actual experience of this, I don't think most of us would stay, wouldn't be here 10, 20, 30, 40 years. So I think we can counter that by saying Krishna consciousness is something that's experienced now and is experienced even better and greater in the future. You know, but we do get those realizations. We do get understanding. We do get transcendental enjoyment. We all experience that, whether it's serving a deity or in an ecstatic kirtan, or we have some realization reading the books, or just through our service. Sometimes those people who are out preaching often feel, I used to experience this more many years ago when I went out in Sankirtan and book distribution, you feel Lord Chaitanya working through you. You feel this whole Krishna consciousness process and movement, and it's something that is understood within the heart. It isn't just a mental process. It's a process of the change of the heart and the experience of Krishna bhakti, even in little ways, developing within us. Yes, Pushkar Prabhu.
Just reminded me of one of the morning walk in South Africa, particularly. But Prabhupada was describing Maya being so strong, and then some sannyasis were on the walk too. And he said, "But you will not understand this just by going to Bhagavad Gita class. It may take 300 lifetimes, but that's not so much."
So, there's that side of it too. Yeah. And Prabhupada said we could become Krishna conscious in a moment. So yeah, so much is up to our desire. Ragamika, one final one here, and then we can finish it in. That's good. So you can use even a green mango in cooking, but you can't do anything with a blank check. Okay. So I'll go to Srila Prabhupada.